Football Weekly Extra.
In today's show, semi-interesting Champions League semi-finals. Hail Chelsea! So what if Barcelona had more possession than a box set of The Exorcist? Not since Andorra's magnificent goalless first half for England has the city witnessed such a brilliant tactical display. Meanwhile, Man United, do they have, like that Rocco Siffredi film title, One Foot in Rome? We'll be asking. There's a preview of Spain's Super Clásico, a look forward to the weekend's Premier League excitement, and the climax of the Championship. We get a man in to round up all those strange going-ons down there. All that plus your post, the real Ronaldo bouncing back just like he's doing press-ups, and that wacky plan for Scotland's Big Two to join a two-level Premier League. We ask, will it all end in tears? Tears, you see. Yeah, all that in Football Weekly Extra. Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of football punditry as we welcome Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
And John Ashdown.
Hiya.
To today's pod. You're all ready?
I'm ready,
excellent.
James.
Let's get going.
That's the third time I've been ready, I think.
Now, tell you what, midweek, let's talk first of all about the Barcelona-Chelsea game. Sean, you're nodding. You're good to go on this. Barcelona, a huge disappointment, I think most people felt. Was that their fault? Was that Chelsea's fault? Sean?
A bit of both. I mean, I think, unfortunately, these days, people watch all the highlight clips on YouTube. They expect Messi to sort of, you know, do mazy dribbles for fun. And in fact, Chelsea, you know, came to Barcelona with a plan. They sat the bus. You know, 9:01 was the formation. It worked. It wasn't very pretty. There's been a big debate on our message boards about whether it was the right thing. Chelsea fans are saying how great they were and how disappointing Barcelona were. I think, but you look at major tournaments, the final stages, teams always play very tight, very negative. And football, I think it is easier if you set out to defend with a bunch of good players. It is, you know, it's hard to break down teams. I think Barcelona, just because they only drew 0-0 at home, yeah, it doesn't mean they're a bad side. It means no. Chelsea defended well. Barcelona are a bit off on the night.
You mentioned the messages. Here's one or two. Rich versus World says Chelsea looked like a rich man's Stoke. M. Meister says Abramovich must cry himself to sleep every night knowing that throwing at least €500 million at a football club over 5 years gets you a team of bodybuilders that adopt the tactics and playing style of a team on a fraction of that kind of budget. Anko United, why was Walter Smith and his team derided for their tactics? This is Rangers all of last season in the UEFA Cup, but Hiddink has been hailed as a tactical genius.
Who has hailed him as a tactical genius?
Well, plenty of people have said well done to Chelsea because you went to Barcelona and you stopped them scoring, even some Barcelona fans, people say they're Barcelona fans, on the message board saying that this was a good result for Chelsea. They did what they had to do. But I think you can take M. Meister's point. If you spent that much money on your team, then why are you incapable of facing Barcelona in any other fashion than trying to shut the game down?
I completely agree. Chelsea did do a decent job of keeping Barcelona out, but I would be embarrassed to either be on or associated with a team that expensive who has to resort to tactics like that in a Champions League semi-final. What are they going to do in the second leg? You know, do it again and hope for penalties, and they haven't won a shootout in 10 years.
I think if you're going to go, that's just what you have to do when you play a team like Barcelona. They're that good that you can't go. I mean,
why aren't Chelsea that good?
Well, then they're not on that same level at the moment, are they? And so if you're aware of your own limitations, why go there and play an open game?
So what you're saying is they're not as good as Barcelona, but they can still beat them and get through to the final.
Absolutely,
by playing this kind. But is that football? What is football? As Hadaway might ask.
It's the nitty gritty.
No, but do you not see the inherent kind of moral or ethical problem in that? If you're saying that we're not as good, but we've found a way to basically stop you playing this game so that we can actually sneak past you, perhaps.
But it is part of the game, and for good or ill, isn't it? I mean, you could tell in the match last night, United were desperate for Arsenal to come and attack them so they could exploit the space that they wanted, and Arsenal just refused to do it, and in the end, they managed to shut United down in the second half, and Barcelona would have loved it if Chelsea had come to the Nou Camp and played in an open, expansive way. And I take the point, but I don't see that team. It's certainly when you're talking about Champions League semi-finals, they don't have an obligation to play in another.
No. All right, jury's to an extent still out because, as you say, Barry, what's going to happen in the second leg? It may be that Chelsea are going to unleash shock and awe on Barcelona, and it'll be a terrific return leg.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Mm. But you know, Chelsea have to score now. They have to attack. I mean, that first leg reminded me of the scene in The Life of Brian when The Christian is thrown into the arena against the big, you know, heavily armed gladiator, and he just runs around in circles for 10 minutes until the gladiator collapses under the weight of his armor.
It's also worth pointing out that these matches are, you know, always or usually tight. I mean, in 14 first leg matches in the semi final since 2001-2, there's only been 22 goals.
Right.
So, average of about 1.5 goals per game is normal.
Right, okay. Well, there is the question, is this a good result for Chelsea? You know, not having an away goal.
Well, they'll probably look at it and say, well, there's no Marquez, there's no Carlos Puyol, and therefore, you know, they will fancy their chances of getting one or two or three at Stamford Bridge.
Let's dial up Sid, because I expect he might have a view on all of this. Mr. Lowe in Spain, very excited by this Anglo-Spanish clash of culture.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Sean's especially grateful because he's just spooned some more of his kind of 11s into his... What is that you're eating, Sean?
I'm not going to say.
Go on.
Say it, Sean.
He can't possibly say because he'll sound so guardian it's unbelievable.
It's a chickpea and quinoa salad.
What is quinoa?
It's a grain, like amaranth and one of the others that the Incas would eat. It was the only thing I could have in the canteen. It was right. Either that or Cadbury's chocolate.
Right.
This is like,
God forbid you should eat that.
Myself and my girlfriend and a few friends were leaving the pub the other night, and I was torn between getting some fried chicken, but was slightly put off by the distance I would have to travel to get same. And my girlfriend said, don't worry, there's a couscous and salad in the fridge at home.
So you went straight for the fried chicken.
Not the same when you've had 6 or 7 pints.
Now, Sid, a clash of culture every bit as stark as that between couscous and salad and fried chicken was played out at the Nou Camp. I expect you must have watched it. Your view, Sid, your view.
Well, it's difficult to know where to start, isn't it? I suppose the first thing to do is to lay down a basic premise, which is, I suppose, that every team is entitled to play any way they want to play, and that's the bottom line, isn't it? They're entitled to play with the resources they've got at their disposal and the way that they think most suits their chances of getting through. But this has definitely laid down a really big difference, and it's something that I think is genuinely problematic for Spanish football. I think we saw it in the Liverpool game. When I would say that probably 85 or 90% of Spaniards thought that the first goal shouldn't have been given to Liverpool for a foul by Fernando Torres on Pepe. And no one in England thought it was a foul. And it was interesting talking to the Athletic Bilbao coach, Joaquin Caparrós, after that Liverpool game. And he was saying, we've got a real problem. We need to unify the criteria of refereeing. Because you've got Real Madrid who come to Bilbao and get a free kick for every little contact. They go to Liverpool and they don't get a free kick for those contacts. And they're waiting for free kicks and fouls all the time. Mm. And they just don't get them. Of course, the question he wasn't answering was, which one of the two is right? So I then asked him that and said, well, which one of the two is right? He said, well, UEFA's criteria, of course. Spanish football has got to learn to, if you like, kind of step up towards it and not assume that every little contact is a foul.
Spanish football and Dani Alves in particular, I think a lot of viewers felt.
Dani Alves is, I mean, obviously, I suppose Dani Alves would argue that it's a little bit rich for a club with Didier Drogba playing for them to complain about his play acting. But Dani Alves has always been, I think, a fantastically good player. But I've never, ever hidden the fact that he's also a player who can be a sneaky little cheat when he wants to be. And actually, he does tend to want to be quite often.
Mm. What was the reaction then in Spain, in Barcelona and Madrid? What were the papers' view?
The reaction is that in the Madrid press, of course, they're saying, this is great, Barcelona running out of steam just in time for the Clásico. In the Barcelona press, as I think we've seen, that there's a sense that Chelsea were pretty rough, were pretty aggressive, were anti-football is the word that's being bandied around. And the other thing they're talking about, of course, is a referee that allowed Chelsea to do so. Mm. Now, up to a point, of course, that's true, but that brings us back to that question of differing football and refereeing cultures.
Although, one thing that I'm surprised didn't get more coverage in England was the penalty shout on Henri, which to me was a penalty. Even ITV's commentator said it was a penalty.
Yeah, so. I have to say I haven't seen a replay because I was in the stadium and I was in the overflow bit rather than the normal press bit, so I didn't have a TV screen.
There's a photo on the front of El Mundo Deportivo that you've probably seen.
And it looks very clear. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, live I thought it was a penalty. The photo looks very clear. It's a tug on a shirt, but I'm always reluctant about photos because photos don't show you the process of it happening. They catch a second, a moment, not even a second. And I was talking to a friend of mine, a journalist, who was actually pitch side, and he was just behind it. And he said he was about 3 or 4 metres away. And he said the strange thing about it was that nobody really appealed and Thierry Henry didn't make much of it. Now, that could be that because Henry has played in England for a long time and maybe his concept is different. But it's definitely a tug of some sort.
Well, it wasn't even a tug on the shirt. It was a hand over the shoulder and a good firm yank backwards, you know. So it was no question it should have been a penalty.
A rare tactical sortie from myself. One thing that struck me was that in about the opening minute of the game, Barcelona had a really good chance. The ball, I think, on a cross from the left-hand side of the field.
Eto'o on the far post, yeah.
And then towards the end of the game, we had, as you mentioned, that Bojan effort, which was, I think, a Dani Alves cross.
Yeah.
And it was only at the very start and the very end that they actually put some crosses in, and it seemed to give Czech all sorts of problems and Chelsea all sorts of problems. But why did it not happen for the intervening 80 minutes?
Well, it's not something that really fits with Barcelona's style. They've not done it very often, although they have done it on a couple of occasions when they've been up against it. And I particularly remember, I must confess, I can't remember who it was now, but they beat someone 2-1, having come back from being in a difficult position. And the winner came from an Alves cross and a Seydou Keita header. And it is something that Keita offers them, but pretty much no one else in the team does the ability to head. Because I suppose what you could argue, James, is that maybe with the Bojan header, we saw why they don't put crosses into the box. Because if the guy who's waiting for it is going to head it over the bar from 2 yards, well, then what's the point in doing it? I do think it's something that maybe Barcelona could mix up their game a little bit more often. And with Dani Alves this season, for the most part, they have done a little bit. I mean, he gives them that little bit of edge, which, or let's call it cheating, if you like, that kind of aggressive edge and the desire to run at people and put balls into the box that other people don't have.
The other question that's being debated here is whether this is a good result or not for Chelsea, having held Barcelona to a goalless game for the first time this season at home.
Well, I think there's an answer there. I mean, there is an answer to that, which is that in a way it's not. I mean, 1-1 puts Barcelona through. Score draw puts them through. There's also another way of looking at it, and let's turn this whole thing on the head. It's a brilliant performance from Chelsea because they got 0-0. Yeah, well, so did Barcelona. So it's sort of, I mean, obviously, of course, it's going to be easier for Chelsea at Stamford Bridge than at Camp Nou, in theory. But it does seem to me that there's quite a lot of knee-jerk responses going on to something that's actually not altogether clear still.
Mm. And it's not as if Stamford Bridge is renowned as a cauldron or a bear pit. I mean, it's home advantage to Chelsea, I suspect, isn't that big a deal.
Well, what will be interesting, Stamford Bridge is much narrower pit, so it may mean it's harder for Barcelona to play their expansive game. And obviously without Carlos Puyol and Marquez, I assume Abidal will come into the centre, and him against Drogba might be a little bit of a mismatch. And I think your dog agrees with me.
Yeah, I think she does.
You're both barking.
That's the one thing that people are not looking at that is a huge advantage for Chelsea in the second leg. Barcelona don't have a defence. Eric Abidal is not a centre back. The other option would be to play Martin Cáceres, and all right, you can have a good game. The sun even shines on a dog's ass some days, and all the rest of it. But Martin Cáceres is rubbish. And if he does play against Chelsea, that's very, very good news for them. One thing that's probably worth pointing out here is, correct me if I'm wrong, but that when Barcelona won the Champions League against Arsenal, what was it now, 3 years ago, they went to Stamford Bridge and won.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, good shout. Because the other precedent everyone's been talking about is the fact that Man United last year had that 0-0 at the Camp Nou and then managed to beat 1-0, I think it was.
Well, there's another issue there, and this is something that maybe we can start saying this is more than just a one-off game. This is a trend for Barcelona. They're struggling against teams that come and play very defensively. Now, what's tended to happen in Spain this year is lots of teams have played defensively, but Barca get them in the end. I suppose the difference is they didn't get Chelsea in the end. They probably should have done, but they didn't. And the same happened with Man United last year. In a way, Man United last year was even more striking because Man United were bigged up as this attacking force with all these great players, Rooney and Ronaldo and Tevez, and they were flying at people, and weren't they great to watch? And they went to Barcelona last year and were unashamedly defensive, with Wayne Rooney pretty much playing as a kind of auxiliary right back most of the game.
You played a seven-a-side game against some Spanish folk yesterday that illustrated neatly the tactical divide between our two nations.
Well, yeah, certainly the cultural one, and this is what I mean by we really are talking about different concepts in that the way the Spanish approach football and the way the English approach football is very different, and perhaps the example is this. Yeah, I played seven-a-side last night. I play a lot of football in Spain, and there is quite often a sense that English players are deemed somehow as being extremely filthy, whereas a lot of English players will go off the pitch thinking, my God, what was that all about? People diving and whinging about absolutely nothing.
Even at seven-a-side level?
even at every level, it's all the way through. And you know, I say this as someone who plays with Spaniards and against Spaniards, and also, I should probably add here, with Uruguayans. Now they really can kick for their country.
Sid, that's excellent. Listen, if we can get hold of you on Monday, that'd be terrific, so we can get your reaction to El Clásico, Real Madrid, Barcelona on the weekend, and of course, looking forward to that interesting second leg at Stamford Bridge.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thank you, Sid.
Cheers.
Well, that brings us to the end of a marathon, part one. If you're interested in seeing Sid's views parroted by myself with a quick look at one or two of the other European reactions to the Champions League semi-finals, then shortly on the Guardian website you'll be able to do just that. A few barges in the background. Lovely. In a second or two, we're going to be looking at the other semi-final, Man United-Arsenal. Now, the other semi-final then. Hey, Man United, Arsenal. United were way better than they've been of late. Arsenal were much worse, I think. And are United going to regret, as Wenger has suggested, not scoring more than one goal?
No. I would be amazed. I mean, I'm amazed that Arsene Wenger is so bullish.
Right.
Because his side, you know, were second best all over the place. You can't see them scoring two goals more than United at the Emirates. I mean, we could argue over which of Fergie's great sides is the best, whether it's the 94 winners, Cup winners, the 99 treble winners, or even this outfit. But I think we'd all agree that this current Arsenal team is nowhere near as good as, you know, the 1999 Wenger side or 2001 or 2004. I mean, this team is a poor side, I think, and I would be amazed. No, you know, they've got no Van Persie, obviously, no Arshavin.
I don't know, is that an obviously, John, is there any word on some chance that he might play?
I was in a pub near the Emirates watching the game.
All right.
Yesterday.
top research.
Absolutely. And all the gooners that were there were sort of optimistic about the second leg because of the players that are going to come back, or they're hoping might come back. But I thought the player that they really missed last night was Arshavin, and obviously he's not going to come back. I didn't actually, because it was an Islington pub, half the game was obscured by people getting delivered veggie burgers and and quinoa and chickpea salads and that sort of thing at their tables.
I heard you were hobnobbing with one of my top celebrity chums.
Yeah, we saw Dara O'Brien and what's the other fella?
Dara O'Brien.
Oh, I don't know.
Who's the other one then, Barry?
Jonathan Creek.
Jonathan Creek.
Who's not Jonathan
Who's
Creek.
Not my celebrity.
Alan Davis.
Alan Davis.
Oh, right. He doesn't seem your demographic, really. No. Okay. Okay, Barry, I don't know if your view of game was obscure.
I think Manchester United might well have left it behind them last night. They played really well. Didn't take their chances, mainly because Manuel Almunia turned into an octopus for the evening and kept Arsenal in the tie. And if Arsenal do end up going through, and I can easily see them scoring two more than United, because they won't play that badly again.
With that defence, I mean, you've got Diaby and Song protecting Silvestre and Touré. I mean, I don't look at that and think there's a clean sheet there.
Well,
I thought the most impressive performance last night came from the referee. Who was superb, and the manner in which he absolutely refused to tolerate any of Cristiano Ronaldo's shenanigans was very amusing.
That was superb reaction from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ronaldo threw, like, it was a bona fide tantrum. He balled his fists, he stamped his feet, big whingy face.
Is it on YouTube anyway?
It should be. Yeah. It should be.
I mean, I've got a four-month-old baby who, when she hasn't been fed for a while, doesn't go into such tantrums as this.
Right.
Although she does wriggle herself over quite impressively.
That's good news.
She got the wind. I don't know what Ronaldo's excuse is.
Well, anyway, Fergie's a bit windy about the return leg. He says that Arsenal can rest players. And he has the excitement of a 12:45 kickoff, is it, on Saturday against Middlesbrough, at Middlesbrough, where they drew 2-2 last year. And Middlesbrough, of course, their only victory in the last century or so was against Liverpool, so clearly they can get it up for the big time.
I'm amazed Fergie is saying that he's going to change his entire midfield and attack for the game. That's what he said. I mean, since 2002, Middlesbrough have beaten United three times and drawn twice out of eight games.
Wow.
So they've got a decent record there. You know, Middlesbrough have to get something, you'd imagine, with only four games left, and, you know, they're deeper in the doo-doo than...
Go on. Deeper in the doo-doo.
No, you've missed it now. The moment's gone.
Oh. I'm sorry, listeners.
I really wanted to know what was coming.
Sean, deeper... Should we guess? Should it be actually a listener competition? What analogy was Sean about to come out with? No, Using your skill and judgment.
The best one, we'll send a prize. We'll have an Xbox game. Or
you can enter as well, Sean.
I might well do.
All right, then. Okay, deeper in the doo-doo. Rio Ferdinand out not just for the Borough game, apparently, but also quite possibly for the second leg. And we've seen how United's defence perform when Rio's not there.
Mm, although Wes Brown's nearing full fitness, so he might come in and shore things up.
Yeah, as you say, John. Meanwhile, Arsenal, of course, will be away at Portsmouth. It's not an easy game. Portsmouth's technically not out of trouble, but they've never defeated the Gunners in a Premier League game, it says on my stats page. Liverpool, meanwhile, who are the side putting pressure on Man United in a manner of speaking at the top of the table, will be at home to Newcastle, who probably rank as their favourite all-time opponents in the Premier League. They've never scored as many goals against any other team as they have against Newcastle, etc., etc., etc. Steven Gerrard apparently back for this game. Newcastle, who had that 0-0 draw with Portsmouth on Monday night. And is the jig up for them?
When you have four games left, you can't really cherry-pick which ones you're going to take points from. You just go out and you fight like dogs and try and get points anywhere you can.
Indeed so.
Well, in a sense, well, they've been building up the three home... Before the Portsmouth game, they were building up the three home games as these three must-win games. And you could almost sense on Monday night, I did the minute-by-minute, and you could see there was a certain amount of tension because they knew it built this game up so much. Mm. That they had to win.
Certain amount of attention. Did you see the magnificent Blade and Races performance by the local opera?
Oh, it was awful, wasn't it? It was toe-curlingly, wine-gum-spittingly bad. Mm. I was eating some wine.
He then went and made fun of the Portsmouth fans who'd made an 800-mile round trip. Mm. So, yeah.
Classy stuff.
Elsewhere in the Premier League this weekend, Man City are hosting Blackburn. Big game that for Mark Hughes, but probably not for anybody else.
Well, I think Blackburn are safe now. Yeah. City haven't got very much to play for. I mean, the interesting games for me, I think Sunderland Everton's quite interesting.
Coming on to that,
because Sunderland, I think, will need a point from somewhere.
They've only scored four goals in the last nine league games, Sunderland.
God, you're a stat machine, aren't
you? I am a stat machine.
tell me
mind is a weapon, Barry.
Tell me something about Hull.
Well, they haven't won in, what is it, 20? They've had one victory in 22 now, is it?
You see, I have a friend of mine who used to work on Football Focus.
Aston Villa are without a win in their last nine Premier League games. There we go.
I had a friend of mine on Football Focus.
Who was that?
I can't say. But he...
Why not?
Because some of the stuff he was telling me was...
I see. All right.
But, he would have... there would be a whole army of stat people that would just be feeding things. But I just want, there's no one else here apart from you, Jimbo. It's all in that bald head of yours, isn't it?
Right.
But wasn't he reading them off a sheet that producer Pete handed him?
Well, the point is, though, that here in the BBC, they've got a whole army of researchers that would feed things to Stubbs.
What you're saying, this isn't the BBC, Sean?
No, but somehow you've got it all...
In my head, on a piece of paper.
This isn't really going anywhere, is it?
Right, okay. Aston Villa without a win in their last nine Premier League games. Hull, are they next in line for a trouble? Yeah, they are. They're 3 points clear of Newcastle. Villa, if the season had begun at the start of the year, they'd now be 12th, but really it didn't, so why are we talking about that? So other games at the bottom then. Oh, West Brom, who are at Spurs. Do you know, interestingly, we talk about teams getting out of trouble and all that. West Ham, 2 years ago when they made their amazing comeback, they had almost exactly the same number of points, only 1 point more than West Brom do now.
But the thing is, West Brom haven't got a player that shouldn't be playing for them.
No,
that's the thing, yeah. Hang on, let me just get this huge chip off my shoulder.
All right,
fair enough. I half fancy, I'm going to be covering that game on Saturday, and sort of half fancy West Brom to get something there.
I heard Harry Redknapp on Sky Sports News this morning saying that he can see no reason why Spurs shouldn't be challenging for a Champions League place next season. I burst out laughing.
All right. How's your bet going, Sean and Barry?
Spurs are 10th.
Right. So it's balanced on
the
edge.
And I think they're 4 points clear of whoever's 11th.
I think Barry, the bank of Glendenning, will have to start.
I tell a lie. Spurs are 3 points ahead of Wigan,
who
have a game in hand.
And they're playing Bolton at the weekend, where they might hope. Although, but Wigan have really fallen off the pace recently, haven't they? That's... as ever, you can get the latest information on all those exciting fixtures and any others that we might have forgotten to mention at guardian.co.uk/football. Here on the pod very, very shortly, we're going to be looking at your posts. John Ashton's going to be taking us through the exciting final day in the Championship, which awaits us this weekend, and we'll probably have a bit of other international stuff. Now, Ooh, Friday sees the launch of a new football section on The Guardian's Catine website, which aims to raise money for a football tournament. What football tournament, you ask? Well, it's a football tournament. Is it in Katine?
It is in Uganda, James.
All right, Sean, thank you very much for that. Katine is a village in the northeast of Uganda that The Guardian has been supporting for the last 3 years, and this tournament is a way of combining a passion for football among Katine villagers and a way of promoting development in the area, which has been scarred, of course, by conflict over the past couple of decades. Excellent stuff. Sean, where can people go to find out more information?
Well, if you just go to theguardian.co.uk/Katine.
Katine.
And, I mean, I'm not going to do a bad Irish accent, but, you know, as Bob Geldof would say, give us your feckin' money.
Right, so it's the idea is for people to give money.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
I thought you said you weren't going to do a bad Irish accent.
Sure.
I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
Now I'm five.
Give us your fucking money.
I'm five. I'm
five.
There goes the explicit tag again.
I'm 5/8 Irish, so I'm not being racist before the
right. Okay. Listen, well, Stephen Wells gets on your case. Listen, while you're on there, you might find your way to guardian.co.uk/footballweekly and post some messages. It's just gone crazy on the message boards. Another bumper crop. Last one actually extended the last one off the Mondays. We went on until Monday evening, even though we'd already done a new one. They were still not singing anymore, was bravely batting, trying to get us into the 500s. I think he got it up to about 450. Now, on to this week's post. Now, we were talking about the Black Virgin of Montserrat. Who went on the... Oh, it was Espanyol's manager had done a pilgrimage there, and Espanyol started winning some games. Tough Brett says, nay, pod members should be advised that the Black Virgin of Montserrat is a fake, and any prayers directed towards her will probably not be answered. Don't ever hike 12 kilometres to the top of Montserrat. It's rubbish, says Tough Brett. Sean?
Well, you know, breaking news, you know, the Shroud of Turin isn't actually Jesus.
Right.
Laws doesn't cure people. I mean, it's not Doesn't really...
It?
Not really.
No. I don't know. I've never seen any statistical...
There's been about two people, I think, in about 30 years that have claimed to be cured.
All right.
I'm going to Lourdes.
I quite like the fact that Tough Brett has put probably in there just to cover his back in case people do get their prayers answered.
Right, I reckon Tough Brett went up there and asked for like a PlayStation and £5,000 in cash and it didn't appear and now he's bitter. Yeah. I don't think that's quite how it works.
Right. Oz Pompey's got an interesting fact, since we're talking about Montserrat, about the Montserrat football team, as well as being joint bottom in the FIFA World Rankings. This is two interesting facts. I didn't know that. I wonder who they're joint bottom with. They are managed by former Norwich player Ruel Fox. I'd suggest Mr. Fox invites his old Norwich team to Montserrat for a prayer because they're in need of some divine inspiration this weekend. Oh, I should have read that later because that would lead brilliantly onto the championship. Hold that thought, John. John Ashton, because you're coming up with the championship thing. Other interesting posts this week. Ooh, Roger Palmer, an old girlfriend of mine, or friend who was a girl, met Ryan Giggs in a nightclub about 15 years ago. He was with Lee Sharp and a few others, but she is no big follower of football. Ryan walked up to her and said, I'm Ryan. She said, hello, I'm Claire. He was a bit taken aback and said, Ryan Giggs. She said, do you want to know my surname too? Anyway, that's...
It's a bit like Barry.
It's very like Barry.
We're not telling that story again.
No, we're not.
Yeah, he is a serial chatter-upper by the sound of things.
Nice, Itchy C says, can we get a mention of Ryan Nelson scoring for Blackburn on the weekend? First goal by a Kiwi in the Premier League. We're pretty chuffed. Only took 16 years or so. Postmodern Kiwi points out that it's Ryan Nelson's first goal for Blackburn after 141 appearances. Is this a record for a first-time scorer in the top flight? 141?
Almost certainly not.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
All right, then. Dontal has some interesting information about how Greek football are rearranging their league. It's a bit mad, actually.
If I could just go back to that Ryan Nelson. I love the way New Zealanders are so competitive and up themselves. They even want to be the best at being the worst.
Right.
The latest to score.
It was quite sweet. But anyway, Domtal, what they're going to do is they're going to have a playoff system, fair enough, to work out who's going to qualify for Champions League and Europa League. Olympiacos, who finished top this year, qualify automatically. The team who finished second, third, fourth and fifth play out a mini home and away series between them. All right, that's all normal. But they start on 3-2-1 and 0 points as a result of their finishing places in the league. It's a little bit of excitement, says Domtal, to an otherwise dull ending to the season. It's a curious manner. But speaking of rearranging leagues and stuff, a lot of people posting and arguing back and forth about Phil Gartside's suggestion that we have a two-tier Premier League with Celtic and Rangers involved. Arsenal asking if there's any thoughts on this proposed migration. I think it's... I hope I'm not alone, says Arsenal, in thinking it's a ludicrous and a step closer to the Fat Cat's favourite, a European Super League. V. Sinical suggests that there are plenty of people. In fact, we've seen lots of people voicing support for the idea. And basically, one of the reasons is that no matter how well you run the clubs like Celtic and Rangers, the business model, while they're just playing in Scotland, doesn't work. So they need basically to play in the Premier League. I don't know. It's a strange one, isn't it? Why has this suddenly come up now, John?
Well, wasn't there a sort of an FA meeting on it
last week,
something along those lines. I don't see. I mean, is the proposal just for Celtic and Rangers? So why can't the other teams all? If Celtic and Rangers are allowed to join the English league, then surely all the other Scottish teams should
just
join
throw
as well.
All the Scottish into the.
We'll
English
all just have
league.
A big melting pot of
right.
everything.
Because we've a British
got,
league.
Yeah, well, we've already got a Welsh, team potentially in the Premier League next season if Cardiff do the business. But I don't see why it should only be Celtic and Rangers.
That sounds a lot more practical, John. Thanks.
Aren't there enough very mediocre teams in the Premier League already? Why do we need two more from Scotland?
Well, the suggestion is that were they to have access to the kind of revenue that the Premier League teams enjoy, that they wouldn't be mediocre. As indeed, arguably, they weren't, say, a decade
isn't
ago.
Isn't Gareth side as well in this cunning plan of his, there wouldn't be any relegation or promotion?
Oh, really?
As far as
well,
I know.
Well, if there's two tiers of Premier League football, presumably there would be some relegation between
Well,
the
I don't
two.
Think there'd be any relegation out of the bottom tier.
All right, okay. It's all a bit mad. Sean, it's not going to happen, is it?
Probably not. I mean... Right. Fifth knife will go on, the big four will keep finishing the big four. Celtic, you know, 2 years' time we'll be talking about this.
All right.
And all that will happen is we'll be a little older, a little greyer.
I won't be. I just thought I'd say it before you do. You always have a pop at me. I won't be greyer there. Happy now? Right, okay. Championship, John Ashton.
Yeah, where to start?
Where to start? It's the final day of the season, yeah?
It is, this Sunday.
All right, and as you brilliantly pointed out in your roundup last Monday, it all comes down to two games.
Two games, one at the Medeski Stadium and one at Selhurst Park. The Medeski, Reading take on Birmingham, Selhurst. It's Crystal Palace against Sheffield United. And sort of for people who haven't been following it, the breakdown works out like this. If Birmingham win, they're promoted to the Premiership. If Birmingham fail to win and Sheffield United win, then Sheffield United are promoted to the Premiership. If Sheffield United fail to win and Reading win, then it's Reading who move up to the top flight. So it's there's, I think
Wolves are up. Birmingham, Sheffield, and Reading looking for the other automatic
for
promotion
for the second spot. Yeah,
right. Okay, and then you got below them Cardiff, Burnley, and Preston, who are in line for playoffs potentially.
Yeah, there's a three-way tight for the tussle for the last two playoff spots as well.
Who would you like to see in the Premier League, John?
Well, I'm slightly biased as I'll be at Selhurst Park with my Sheffield United bubble hat on Sunday. So I'd like to see the Blades do it.
Okay,
and if not us, then. And Reading, I suppose. But,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was saying to John on our way up here to Near Earth Orbit today, like, do you really want promotion? Is it that... I, to be honest, would not be that upset if Sunderland got relegated, because I would rather them see them do well in the Championship than get hammered every week in the Premiership. And I think it should be like, say, Bullseye. If you win promotion, then you're allowed, you know, step aside because you don't want to go for the star prize and let whoever's behind you step up if they want to. Because is the Championship really that place bad a place to be if all those teams like Peterborough and Leicester are fighting so hard to get into it?
Hmm.
You know, it must have some merit.
Barry, you're being too unworldly. It's all about money. You know, Sheffield United have invested so much into the Asian market. They own 90% of Chengdu Red Bull.
It's Chengdu Blades now.
It's a Chengdu Blades.
Sheffield United,
90% of the Chinese First Division team.
Blades they've been renamed.
Yes.
And where do they play? Their
China.
Chengdu.
Chengdu. You know, Chinese football team, Chengdu. The clues in the statement.
Well, I don't know. It might have been
They've sponsored
Taiwan
the Hong Kong FA Cup. I know they're looking to sort of branch out into India as well.
Sheffield United?
Yeah, so this they made a big play for the Asian market.
You turn your back on the Blades for a second and they bloody go and conquer the Far East. What did Manchester United say about all this? Because I thought that was supposed to be their baby.
Well, I mean, this is only quite low level for Sheffield United, but obviously if they get to the Premier League,
right?
Then they will try and, you know, there'll be shirts on sale from Poonam to Auckland. Probably.
Of course, the big thing John didn't mention was Sheffield United are playing Crystal Palace, and Crystal Palace are managed by Neil Warnock, who's a lifelong Sheffield United fan. Do you think he'll... make his team or ask his team to roll over?
I think it's just a huge red herring that. I mean, I just don't. Although there's been a lot of people sort of conspiracy theories flying around, and that he'll sort of. Firstly, he can't play his kids because. Well, he will play his kids, but that's because he's been playing them all season. That's all he's got at Palace. And secondly, I just don't understand how people would imagine that he will tell his players not to try or not to, you know, not to be fully committed. I just think it's deluded that people would expect that to happen. So I'm fully he'll be raging if we get a dodgy penalty at some point, or if the referee makes a mistake, he'll be furious. So I really don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's going to be coming to the things, really.
All right, Charlton have gone down, Southampton have gone down, and neither Norwich or Barnsley. Probably Norwich are going to join them, yes?
Yeah, Norwich are 3 points behind Barnsley going into the last day. They need a win and hope that Barnsley lose. Norwich have done a sort of, at the sort of the Newcastle and Shearer thing by appointing Brian Gunn as their manager, who's sort of a real hero at Carrow Road. And it's sort of had the sort of same effect as Alan Shearer, really. They look like dropping.
Oh dear.
It's quite strange, really, for those of us who watch, you know, quite a lot of football in, you know, the 80s and 90s. Certainly, you know, Charlton, Norwich, Southampton were always these provincial clubs that were always run fairly well. You know, had the odd success both in the league and the cup and in Europe. To see them all going down into League One is quite sad.
Province
really.
Of Charlton.
Well. Southeast London, it's
all right. All right. Well, I tell you what, it's a warning. It's an alarm bell for the likes of Newcastle,
but these clubs are all, you know, they all get roughly, you know, 20,000 fans. That, you know, they're well supported, well run, and yet they're through the trapdoor, Jimbo. Yeah.
Shocking, isn't it?
Norwich and Southampton came down together in 2005 from the Premier League, and Charlton was 2007. So. Mm. What's that, 4 years? It doesn't take long to go from the bottom of one table to the bottom of another.
Certainly doesn't. You mentioned Peterborough. Their win at Colchester, coupled with the MK Dons' defeat at home to Walsall, secure back-to-back promotions. I'm quoting from your article, John, for Dan Ferguson's side. So he's a bit of a whiz, is he, Ferguson Jr.?
Well, they have been bankrolled by this multimillionaire property bloke. I think
he's Irish.
Yeah, I think he might be Irish, actually, yeah. But at the same time, you know, you still got to put the team together and win the games. And they've done, he's done really, really well. I think they'll be fine in the Championship next year as well, because they'll throw a little bit of money at it, and we'll probably do a bit of a Swansea. I would expect sort of mid-table.
But if Peterborough's sugar daddy is an Irish property developer, that would suggest he might be on his uppers at this stage, in light of recent economic events. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, possibly, but I think they'll be. Yeah, unless it does go seriously tits up for him, then they'll at least be financially stable enough to compete with the teams in the Championship.
Apparently, you've all these taxi drivers in Dublin at the moment going around wailing on it or weeping onto their steering wheels because all the property they invested in Bulgaria and Turkey is now worthless.
Sean?
No, so I lived in Peterborough for a year.
Ah,
horrible place.
Oh,
nice, all right. nice football stadium. That's kind of old fashioned.
Okay. The UEFA Cup semi-finals, very interesting. Who is it? Shakhtar Donetsk against
Dynamo Kiev, or Dynamo at home.
And then you've got the Werder Bremen against Hamburg, all-German semi, which sadly we can't tell you about because it hasn't been played yet, but we'll be talking about that in Monday's pod. Final item, John.
I was just going to say all-German semi was surely a cue-up line for one of your euphemisms, James.
No. Meanwhile...
Not even a little sausage gag?
A little wiener.
Oh dear. Yeah, don't start me off. The other, speaking of sausages where you don't expect, Ronaldo in Brazil there. You know, we talked about the fact that he came back from his latest injury, and boy, has he come back. Two goals in the Copa do Brasil final against Santos, well, first leg anyway. The second win, a 3-1 win. The second one is a real stonker, brilliant goal. Shimmies inside his defender and then chips the keeper from, 15 yards out?
It's like a sort of perfectly hit pitching wedge. Just
it's nice stuff.
A flop shot,
yeah.
Excellent stuff.
We're going back to the sausages again, aren't we?
And so there you go. Do you know he's now scored 8 goals in 9 matches since his return? It's brilliant stuff, and he hasn't been injured once. And he's brought in, apparently, millions of extra euros in sponsorship for his club. And they're now seriously saying, you know, he will be back in the Brazil side sooner or later. Because also, who else is, you know, it's not as if there's great competition. Adriano is now saying that he's going to sign probably for Flamengo. But in the meantime, he's hardly a shoo-in for the national side, for the Seleção. So, we could well see Ronaldo back in international action, which I for one, would be delighted to see. He's also been offered a contract by Palermo, Ronaldo has, in Italy. He says, I'm very flattered. It would be wonderful. So, there you go.
How old is he now?
He's 32, I think.
Okay, so it's not like he's not like he's
on
his
last. Italian terms. Mm.
Yeah, go for 10 years.
Good.
And well, there you go.
AC Milan to buy me, one of the youngest players on their books, wouldn't they?
Well, he's been at AC Milan, and Yeah, it's good. AC Milan, of course, still chasing that Pazza Idea, that crazy comeback against Inter. I think, as Paolo was saying on Monday, extremely unlikely, unless something happens to Inter this weekend. They're at home to Lazio, and we'll be talking about that on Monday. But that is it. Full Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to Sean Ingle, Barry Glendening and John Ashdown.
Yes.
And to producer Pete and Ben there as well. And look forward to seeing you on Monday. Bye-bye for now.